Damn. Well, I certainly am glad to be back behind the microphone. Thanks to Brad Friedman for minding the store all those days. My name is Mike Malloy. Welcome to tonight's program. We appreciate your being here. Thanks, Brad. Good job, dude, as always. Tonight, all 3 hours are sponsored by Lena Kempner. Thank you, Lena. She has a message. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. Wow. Thanks, Lena. Nice sentiment, and thanks for sponsoring all 3 hours. We appreciate it very much. Do you want me to mention anything about Herman Cain? They're all lying! Every one of them is lying! I was trying to help this woman. That's all I was trying to do, help her get a job. 13-year affair, huh, Herman? Jesus Christ. They're all lying, every one of them. Like Wolf Blitzer. I saw a piece of video. Wolf Blitzer says, so if this woman says she had a 13-year affair with you, she's lying, right? Right there, Herman fudged a little bit, you know. I don't want to get into it, Wolf, you know. I have one answer. 999! That's how many women he's had affairs with, apparently. Or messed with, or put his hand on their thigh. He's going to go home and talk to his wife. His wife will come out tomorrow. Well, this just doesn't sound like Herman. I just don't think that Herman ever could have done anything like this. It must be those liberals trying to get Herman. I have to address it because of the comedic value. The woman here, Ginger White, she's from Atlanta. She said that she and Herman had a 13-year extramarital affair that ended right before Cain announced his campaign, right? All right, honey, listen, I'm going to have to say goodbye because I'm going to run for president. You're going to do what, pizza man? I'm going to run for president. What am I supposed to do? Disappear! That's what you're supposed to do! Damn! She said, it wasn't complicated. I was aware that he was married. I was also aware I was involved in a very inappropriate situation, relationship. The American people, Cain said in a statement released after Ms. White's interview aired, the American people, he said, are tired of, quote, dirty politics and smear tactics, end quote. And that the allegations were prompted by, what is that, political opponents, quote, afraid of a Cain presidency, end quote. You chump. Chump, sit your ass down. Sit down, chump. Look, you sold your books. The party's over. Lights out. Or lights are on. That's what I'm talking about. The lights are up. Time to go home, Herman. They're all lying. Every single one of them is lying. All these women got together. They're all being paid by Bill Clinton. No, I don't know. They're being paid by somebody, but they're all lying. Every one of them, Herman? Yes! Watch this woman that had the 13-year affair. Ginger White, watch her produce a 9-year-old kid. That's a lie, too! Say goodnight, Herman. Goodnight, Herman. Bush and Blair have been found guilty of war crimes 5 days ago. A war crimes tribunal in Malaysia has found Bush and British Prime Minister, former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, guilty of war crimes for their roles in the Iraq War. The five-panel Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal decided that Bush and Blair committed genocide and crimes against humanity by leading the invasion of Iraq in 2003. That's according to a Press TV correspondent. Press TV is, of course, Iranian. So if you need to know that, there you go. The Malaysian tribunal judges ruled that the decision to wage war against Iraq by the two former heads of government was a flagrant abuse of law and an act of aggression that led to large-scale massacres of the Iraqi people. Well, all that's true. I mean, our own Justice Robert Jackson all those years ago, after the end of hostilities at the end of World War II, when the German high command and the industrialists and the people who were responsible ultimately for the deaths of upwards of 40 million people, when they were put on trial, our justice said that these crimes were the worst crimes, crimes of aggression. But, of course, you know, we hanged them, and we hanged some of the Japanese high command, but George Bush, Tony Blair, nah, they won't be hanged. Weird week, wasn't it? I did not have access to news. The only news source that we had during this week was CCTV, the Chinese commercial television channel via satellite. And the news reporting, you know, it was pretty good. It was like CNN used to be. Pretty straightforward. But it was more or less global rather than, you know, United States news. And as a result, you know, a lot of this stuff, we miss the expected and certainly anticipated inability of the super committee to find any solutions to anything. And all the other things that occurred on Black Friday when people were dying in the great commercial temples of the United States. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't laugh because somebody has a heart attack and slobbering, goddamn grasping Americans crawl over him to get their whatever the hell they were going for in Target or Walmart or wherever. I shouldn't laugh at that. But the comedic value of that, like the comedic value of Herman Cain, is just there. I mean, it's there. You know, the planet is ending itself, and these sons of bitches are crawling over dead people to get to, or dying people to get to stuff. Of course. And what's this we heard? Now we heard that we were in San Juan. We were in we found this church in downtown San Juan. I forget the name of it. Iglesia de Anuncion or something. And they had, you know, they had dead people in the basement. They had the, what do you call those? Sarcophagi? No, what were they? The moss or the crypt in the basement of the church. So we went down there to look at some of the old entombed priests and leaders of the Catholic Church that brought so much death and destruction to the people of Puerto Rico. And at that moment, there's an English language paper in Old San Juan that I picked up. Somebody left it on the trolley or something, and it was talking about the deaths of the pepper spraying. And people, you know, the craziness. I don't know, man. Boop, 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 boop. Where we were, there's no such thing as Black Friday. We were on an island that is considered to be the poorest in the Caribbean. And, you know, it hasn't been exploited yet by the capitalist profit machine. I'm sure eventually it will be, because the beaches and the jungles are too pretty to be left alone. Of course, pretty is relative and I guess poverty is relative too. We'll be right back.
You know. a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
The Mike Malloy Show. Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Paranoia strikes deep. Into your life it will creep.
21 past the hour. Okay, it wasn't just Press TV reporting this. The Montreal Gazette is reporting it about Bush and Blair. Found guilty by this Malaysian war crimes tribunal. The verdict, of course, is purely symbolic because the tribunal has no enforcement powers. But they're also expected to later hear torture and war crimes charges against seven others, including Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. Thank God somebody is. You know, why isn't that being done here? What? Right? Anyway, thanks, Bruce in California, for sending that on. Got an email. I got a moment with Bob that I'll share with you after the next break. You might find kind of interesting. I hope you had an interesting holiday. We did. And again, thanks to Brad Friedman for minding the store while we were gone. I've discovered that I can travel with three kids. It can be done. They were a lot of fun. What is very pleasing, I guess is the right word, when you travel with little kids to places that a couple of them had never been before. Molly's been there, but and you see things through their eyes. I know that's kind of a cliche, but you hear them talking about what they're seeing, whether it's a castle or an old fort, a 500-year-old fort, or a basement in a church where there's a crypt and all the inscriptions are in Latin and Spanish. You know, whatever it is, when you travel with a kid, whether it's your kid or grandkid or your niece, your nephew, whatever, if you really open up to that, wow, that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun doing that. So to people who don't like to travel with children, you know, you may be missing out on something. Of course, it depends on the kids, too. I mean, you know, you have a bunch of whiny 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds. Yeah, that can be a real deal breaker. But if the kids are, you know, like 7, 8, 9, 10, it's a lot of fun. So I hope that you you had as interesting a holiday as we did. And approached Thanksgiving with the right historical evidence of what that day is all about. That was one of the most interesting parts of the trip, was explaining to two grandchildren and Molly the what Thanksgiving really was about. You know, his little eyes all getting big, like, really? Is that what it's about? Yeah. Oh. You mean the pilgrims and the Indian? No. The pilgrims and the Indians didn't, you know. It's not, you know, it's probably not as shocking for kids to find out the truth about that day as it is for kids to find out that there really is no Santa Claus. But, you know, when you're sitting with the jungle not far behind you and the Caribbean in front of you, and you're in an area that was populated by Taino Indians, when Christopher Columbus's ships arrived there and immediately started the slaughter, it's pretty hard to pretend that the stories in the fourth grade or fifth grade are really true. You know what I'm saying? Of course you do. Of course you do. And of course, what was amazing to me was once they knew the truth, once they understood, you know, and got over the OMG part, once they understood what the truth was, the kids were just like, oh, yeah. And I said, so, you know, if you want to be thankful for something on this particular day, I mean, just look around here. You know, you have the sea, you have family, you're alive, you can smell these smells and see these sights, and that's plenty to be thankful for, right? And, you know, they were all in agreement, and we carried on. Great fun. Not a whole lot of time spent trying to, you know, get too deep into the teaching moment, if you know what I mean. All right, we'll be back. When we come back after this break, a moment with Bob. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
There was no fresh salad cause there's hypers in the cat. Staten Island disappeared at noon. And they say the Midwest is in great distress and NASA blew up the moon. The ozone layer has no ozone anymore. And you're gonna leave me for the guy next door. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the...
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored. As a matter of fact, all 3 hours tonight sponsored by Lena Kempner. Her message, thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. Ow! Thank you, Lena. From our good friend and now American expat, Bob Alexander. Hey, Mike. This is under the heading, Not As Smart As Lemmings. Hey, Mike. We don't do his music anymore, do we? You have it? Oh, okay. Go ahead, do it. Ah, there it is. And now, a moment with Bob. Well, he's published now. He's over at TV News Lies. Webpage. He's got his own op-ed. Puts him out there. Another moment with Bob brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Hey, Mike. An angry rhesus monkey is apt to defecate in its hands and throw its feces at you. I think this accurately sums up the debating skills of the current crop of Republican cartoons. Vying for the top job, all except Rick Perry, of course. He's taken the deer caught in the headlights stylings of George W. Bush to a whole new level by simply soiling himself on national television. But he's not as smart as Mitt Romney and the rest of them because he doesn't know what to do with his ammunition once he's made it. After watching the Republican gong show, it's obvious to anyone smarter than a goldfish that any of these so-called leaders of the Republican Party, if elected, will take this country straight to hell at roughly the speed of sound. The Democrats are the obviously prudent choice. Obama proposes proceedings down the road to perdition at the stately rate of only 55 miles an hour. Thank God our country has a two-party system. We have the freedom to choose how fast we want to die. Seemingly switching topics for a moment, did you know massive numbers of migrating lemmings do not commit mass suicide by flinging themselves off cliffs to drown in the sea below? That particular fake fact was implanted in my brain because I grew up watching Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color on a black and white Zenith television set. The 1958 Disney documentary, White Wilderness, staged the footage of lemmings jumping to their death during faked scenes of mass migration. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation documentary, Cruel Camera, found the lemmings used for white wilderness were flown over 500 miles from Hudson Bay to Calgary, where they did not jump from the precipice but were launched off the cliff using a specially built turntable. Years and years later, a couple of video games reinforced the notion that lemmings were prone to snuffing themselves, but lemmings do not commit mass suicide. We do. We're in the process of doing it right now. And we're more ambitious than the misunderstood Arctic rodents. We're taking as much of the planet as we can with us. We're all marching steadily up to the edge of the cliff, surrounded by friends, family, and everybody else trapped in this insane culture. We're at the point now where we can see where we're going and what's going to happen once we get there. We're going to jump. All of us. Whether we want to or not, we're going to jump. It's the classic nightmare. We're going to our doom, but we can't seem to stop putting one foot in front of the other. Some of us are telling the others that we shouldn't keep walking up to the cliff, and some of us agree that we should stop, but we just keep walking in the same direction. Every day, all day, some yahoo like Rush Limbaugh pulls out a bullhorn and tells us to walk faster. This is the direction we're supposed to be headed, and we've got to pick up the pace to get there even quicker. Anyone who says otherwise is a dirty, rotten, liberal, jihadist terrorist. And then a conciliatory voice from the liberal community advises us that we should possibly consider slowing down. Many of us agree, and the endless argument about speeding up or slowing down ripples through the crowd, walking relentlessly toward the cliff. As we march toward oblivion, we can see, if we choose to look, the destruction we've caused everywhere we've been. Wherever we've walked, the fertile land has become a desert. With every step, we see it's getting worse. A tour of Seattle's Museum of History and Industry begins with a small placard on the wall stating that the native people who greeted the American settlers had lived in the region for, quote, thousands of years, end quote. To be more precise, they had been living there since the end of the last glacial period over 10,000 years ago. The native people looked around and saw their home and lived there for 100 centuries. The men who founded Seattle looked around and saw dollar bills. They brought the old growth forests and salmon from unimaginable abundance to scarcity to near extinction in less than 100 years. Derek Jensen wrote in his book Endgame, quote, "Do you believe that our culture will undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living? For the last several years, I've taken to asking people this question. At talks and rallies and libraries, on buses and airplanes, at the grocery store, the hardware store, everywhere. The answers range from emphatic no's to laughter. No one answers in the affirmative. One fellow at one talk did raise his hand, and when everyone looked at him, he dropped his hand and then said sheepishly, oh, voluntary? Oh, no, of course not. My next question, how will this understanding that this culture will not voluntarily stop destroying the natural world, eliminating indigenous cultures, exploiting the poor, and killing those who resist, shift our strategy and tactics? The answer? Nobody knows, because we never talk about it. We're too busy pretending the culture will undergo a magic transformation." End quote. Derek Jensen in his book Endgame. "And yet we walk on," Bob writes. "Stopping is not an option. Anyone who thinks we should stop is delusional. The only societally acceptable argument is, what is the correct speed? Once that is determined, everything will be just fine. But we know that's not true. Regardless of what the feces-flinging monkeys screech or the placating voices of liberals murmur, it's not true at all. So step by harrowing step, the panic starts to build. Why doesn't somebody do something? Why doesn't somebody stop us? Maybe if we change our lifestyle, we can stop marching to the cliff. What if we all ran to our hardware stores and bought energy-saving light bulbs? What if we all took shorter showers, left the car in the driveway and took a bus? And if that's not good enough, what if we went over to the breaker box and turned our houses off for 12 out of 24 hours each day? Would that finally work if we got our energy and water consumption in half?
No.
Each day, a Palm Springs golf course consumes as much water as a family of four uses in 4 years. And a U.S. Navy destroyer uses the same amount of oil in a week that Huntington Beach, California, a city of 200,000 people, uses in a year. To paraphrase Bill Clinton, it's the dominant culture, stupid. We may have seen the beginnings of a way to stop the dominant culture, but it's going to take Occupy Everything. Now. Occupy Everything. It's as simple as not buying anything for God's upcoming birthday and staying home on a national strike day and the next day and the next until the psychopaths understand we're not waking up. We're not walking up to that cliff any longer. We're going to stop. And we're going to talk about where to go from here. Anyone who doesn't agree had better come up with a different plan pretty quick, because the feces-flinging monkeys and the placating liberals are going to grab you by the throat and shove you off that cliff if you don't voluntarily jump. Oh, and P.S., the main argument against a national strike? No one could afford to take time off from work. It's a job security issue. If you don't go to work, you don't get paid, and you will lose your job. In these terrible times of job insecurity, it seems insane to risk the main lifeline. It's a very good argument. Here's my comeback. Years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine about going into a treatment center for alcoholism. He said he didn't want to go because he'd lose his job. I asked him how many more times he could call in sick with the flu or come back after lunch half drunk before he'd get fired anyway. He might get fired if he got help for his problem. He was definitely going to get fired if he didn't. I think we're all in a similar situation. We're dependent upon a system that's wrecking the planet. If we don't participate in the system, we think we won't survive. But if we continue to participate, we know the planet won't survive. If we don't buy crap for Christmas, everyone who lives off retail sales gets it in the neck. Will a national strike cause more layoffs and unemployment? That's the problem with living in a consumer-driven society. Capitalism demands consumption, and the nasty reality is the lives of whoever participates will be consumed. 5 days of our week, if we're lucky enough to have a job, is sacrificed in order to live under capitalism. Has capitalism turned us all into good Germans, powerless, horrified, and fearful of the future? If we don't change the direction we are heading, we'll end up where we're going. Regards, Bob. Actually, it's already begun, but when we come back after the break at the top of the hour, we will open up the lines and see if we can get some live reporting about what's happening with the Occupy movement in L.A. From ACLU.org. While nearly all Americans head to family and friends to celebrate Thanksgiving, the Senate is gearing up for a vote on Monday or Tuesday, that would be today or tomorrow, that goes to the very heart of who we are as Americans. The Senate will be voting on a bill that would direct American military resources not at an enemy shooting at our military in a war zone, but at American citizens and other civilians far from any battlefield, even people in the United States itself. The Senate is going to vote on whether Congress will give this president and every future president the power to order the military to pick up and imprison without charge or trial civilians anywhere in the world. The power is so broad that even U.S. citizens could be swept up by the military, and the military could be used far from any battlefield, even within the United States itself. The worldwide indefinite detention without charge or trial provision is in S-1867, the National Defense Authorization Act bill, which will be on the Senate floor on Monday. That was today. The bill was drafted in secret by Democratic Senator Carl Levin of Michigan and Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, and passed in a closed-door committee meeting without even a single hearing. Does it sound incredible? New powers to use the military worldwide, even within the U.S.? Has no one told the Senate that Osama bin Laden is dead and the president is pulling all of the combat troops out of Iraq and trying to figure out how to get combat troops out of Afghanistan also? And American citizens and people picked up on American or Canadian or British streets being sent to military prisons indefinitely without even being charged with a crime? Really? Does anyone really think this is a good idea? And why now? The answer on why now is nothing more than election season politics. The White House, the Secretary of Defense, and the Attorney General have all said that the indefinite detention provisions in the National Defense Authorization Act are harmful and counterproductive. The White House has even threatened a veto. But Senate politics has propelled this bad legislation to the Senate floor. There's a way to stop this. Senator Mark Udall, Democrat of Colorado, is offering the Udall Amendment that will delete the provision, all the harmful provisions, in fact, and replace them with a requirement for an orderly congressional review of detention power. In support of this harmful bill, this National Defense Authorization Act, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, explained that the bill will, quote, basically say in law for the first time that the homeland is part of the battlefield. And people can be imprisoned without charge or trial, American citizen or not. Another supporter, Senator Kelly Ayotte, a Republican in New Hampshire, also declared that the bill is needed because, quote, America is part of the battlefield. In response to proponents of the indefinite detention legislation, who contend that the bill applies to American citizens and designates the world as the battlefield, Senator Udall disagrees and says that we can win this fight without worldwide war and worldwide indefinite detention. The senators pushing the indefinite detention proposal have made their goals very clear. They want an okay for a worldwide military battlefield that even extends to your hometown. Now's the time to stop this bad idea. Please urge your senators to vote yes on the Udall Amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act. From the ACLU's website, aclu.org. Remember what I just shared with you from Bob Alexander. Marching slowly towards the precipice. Did you know this was going on? Now notice the co-sponsors of the bill. A Democrat and a Republican. And some of you people still think that I'm a traitor for abandoning the Democratic Party. Really? You really think that? That I will support in any manner a party that produces senators who sponsor something called the Defense Authorization Act that declares that I or you or your kids or my kids or your grandma or your mama or whoever can be picked up by the United States military, held indefinitely without trial, without charges, and you wonder why I no longer support either political party, but for goddamn sure not the Democrats? You're kidding me, right? A few weeks ago when Herman Cain's criminal defense attorney, Lynn Wood, got all gangster on everybody and warning anyone else who might want to come forward to consider very carefully. Lynn Wood issued a statement tonight that pretty much confirms that Herman Cain did have a 13-year-long sexual affair with a woman other than his wife. And again, why bring this up? Herman Cain is going to go back to selling pizzas or whatever the hell he did. He got paid. He got his books out or his book or whatever he's got. It's just time for this clown to sit down and shut up. You know what I'm saying? On the other hand, he's great comedic relief. Just keep it coming, Herman. Just keep it on. Keep it on. Keep going. Just keep going. Keep going. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is a Malloy program. Thanks to Brad Friedman, who sat in for me all those days when we were not here. Thanks, Brad. Excellent job again, as usual. And also, this hour is all 3 hours tonight, sponsored by Lena Kempner. Her message, thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. Well, happy birthday, Lena. And thank you. From Jamie, who writes, Mike, I hadn't heard about the heinous, obviously unconstitutional and criminal indefinite detention provision under Senate Bill S-187. Thanks for filling us in. Of course, like the trillions of dollars handed over to Wall Street by the Fed, this crap is always done in secret. Absolutely disgusting. As you may have heard or read, police departments and municipalities across this country have started to stock up on drones to use for so-called security purposes. They're obtaining this military surveillance equipment from Homeland Security. We're beyond a military state. But where are we? My country has become my enemy. Jamie. Yeah. And Jamie's referring to a story that made news in Europe at the end of October. A county north of Houston, Texas, took delivery of a new weaponizable drone, a squat remote-controlled helicopter called a Shadow Hawk that can fire tasers or beanbags at people on the ground. Police in Montgomery County, Texas, say the drone would chase drug smugglers or escaping criminals. Alarmed Europeans wondered if some aspect of drone warfare had come home to the United States. You know, this is what is used in countries that have no defense. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines here. If you'd like to give us a call. Got an email here from Tim from L.A. We need help at Occupy L.A. Now with the mayor and LAPD brass breathing down our necks, we'll need more help now than ever. Can you please send your listeners to tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonate. tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonate. That's slash after com. tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonate. Can you do that? There you go, Tim. The crackdown against Occupy Wall Street-style protesters around the country, of course, we talked about this before we left. And Naomi Wolf, writing in The Guardian of the UK last Friday, kind of confirms it. A coordinated crackdown against peaceful Occupy Wall Street protesters in cities across the nation this past week. All sorts of scenes, elderly woman pepper sprayed in the face, students at UC Davis pepper sprayed by riot police, images proliferated of young women screaming, dragged by the hair by police in riot gear, the pictures of a young man stunned and bleeding profusely from the head emerged in the record of the middle of the night clearing of Zuccotti Park. In New York, a retired state Supreme Court justice and a New York City council member were beaten up by police. In Berkeley, California, one of our greatest national poets, Robert Haas, was beaten with batons. The picture darkened still further when Wonkette and Washington's blog.com reported that the mayor of Oakland acknowledged that the Department of Homeland Security had participated in an 18-city mayor conference call advising mayors on how to suppress the Occupy protests. There you have it. There you have it. And as Naomi Wolf writes, to Europeans, the enormity of this breach may not be obvious at first. Our system of government prohibits the creation of a federalized police force and forbids federal or militarized involvement in municipal peacekeeping. I noticed that right-wing pundits and politicians on the TV shows on which I was appearing all were on message against Occupy Wall Street. Journalist Chris Hayes reported on a leaked memo that revealed lobbyists vying for an $850,000 contract to smear Occupy. Message coordination of this kind is impossible without a full court press at the top. This was clearly not simply a case of a freaked-out mayor's city-by-city municipal overreaction against mess in the parks and cranky campers. As the puzzle pieces fit together, they began to show coordination against Occupy Wall Street at the highest national levels. Okay. Raises the question, why? Why this massive mobilization against these not yet fully articulated, unarmed people? After all, protesters against the war in Iraq, Tea Party rallies, and others have all proceeded without this coordinated crackdown. Is it really the camping? Is it the peeing in public place up against a lamppost? Is that it? Naomi Wolf writes, as I ride, 200 young people with sleeping bags, suitcases, and even folding chairs are still camping out all night and day outside of NBC on public sidewalks awaiting Saturday Night Live tickets. So surely the camping out is not the issue. I was still deeply puzzled as to why Occupy Wall Street, this hapless, hopeful band, would call out a violent federal response. That is, until I found out what it was that Occupy Wall Street actually wanted. The mainstream media was declaring continually, Occupy Wall Street has no message. Frustrated, I simply asked them. I began soliciting online. What is it you want? In the first 15 minutes, I received 100 answers. These were truly eye-opening. The number one agenda item, get the money out of politics. Number two, reform the banking system to prevent fraud and manipulation. Number three was the most clarifying, draft laws against the little-known loopholes that currently allow members of Congress to pass legislation affecting Delaware-based corporations in which they themselves are investors. And when I saw this list, and especially the last agenda item, the scales fell from my eyes. Of course, these unarmed people would be having the crap kicked out of them. More when we come back.
Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep.
Radio matters here.
Twenty-one past the hour. Naomi Wolf writing in the Guardian of the UK about this horrible truth that most Americans are totally unaware of, because most people are pretty much focused on the clown acts of these Republicans, and they are clown acts. You know, Herman Cain, once again, that's where the stories or the storytellers go. They go to the clown acts. Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security, as Naomi Wolf points out, the terrible insight to take away from the news that the Department of Homeland Security coordinated a violent crackdown on peaceful protesters. The takeaway is that the Department of Homeland Security does not freelance. The Department of Homeland Security cannot say on its own initiative, we're going to go after these scruffy hippies. Rather, DHS is answerable up a chain of command. First, New York Representative Peter King, head of the House Homeland Security Subcommittee, who naturally is influenced by his fellow members of Congress, by their wishes and interests. And the DHS answers directly above King to the president. In other words, for Department of Homeland Security to be on a call with mayors. The logic of its chain of command and accountability implies that congressional overseers, with the blessing of the White House, told the Department of Homeland Security to authorize mayors to order their police forces pumped up with millions of dollars of hardware and training from the Department of Homeland Security to make war on peaceful citizens. But why? Why on earth would Congress advise violent, militarized reactions against its own peaceful constituents? Well, the answer is straightforward. In recent years, members of Congress have started entering the system as members of the middle class or upper middle class, but they are leaving privy to vast personal wealth, as we see from the scandal of presidential contender Newt Gingrich having been paid $1.8 million for a few hours consulting to special interests. Their inflated fees to lawmakers who turn lobbyists are common knowledge, but the notion that congressmen and women are legislating their own company's profits, less widely known. And if the books were to be open, they would surely reveal corruption on a Wall Street spectrum. Indeed, we do already know that congresspeople are massively profiting from trading on non-public information that they have on companies about which they are legislating. It's a form of insider trading that sent Martha Stewart to jail. Of course, Martha Stewart never went to jail for insider trading. She went to jail for lying to the investigators about insider trading. But I digress. Since Occupy, Naomi Wolf writes, is heavily surveilled and infiltrated, it is likely that the Department of Homeland Security and police informers are aware, before Occupy itself is, what its emerging agenda is going to look like. If legislating away lobbyists' privileges to earn boundless fees once they are close to the legislative process, reforming the banks so they can't suck money out of fake derivative products, and most critically, opening the books on a system that allows members of Congress to profit personally and immensely from their own legislation, if all of this are just two beats away from the grasp of an electorally organized Occupy movement, well, you will call out the troops on stopping that advance as quickly as you can. So when you connect the dots, what happened last week is the first battle in a civil war in which, for now, only one side is choosing violence. It's a battle in which members of Congress, with the collusion of the American president, sent violent, organized suppression against the people they are supposed to represent. Yeah. Think about that. Occupy has touched the third rail, personal, congressional, profit streams. Sadly, Naomi Wolf concludes, Americans this week have come one step closer to being true brothers and sisters of the protesters at Tahrir Square. Like them, our own national leaders, who likely see their own personal wealth under threat from transparency and reform, are now making war upon us. You better believe it. You better believe it. We'll be back in a moment with your phone calls.
cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour and last hour and next hour, all sponsored tonight by Lena Kempner. It's her birthday. Happy birthday, Lena. Her message, thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. Well, that's awfully nice. Thank you, Lena. Chris is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
All right.
Good. I just wanted to check back in with you. I had spoken with you about a week ago in regards to the Occupy Raleigh movement.
Yeah, right. Talk about turning it into a political, or at least forming a political base around that energy, right?
Correct. Right. And I just wanted to kind of give you a heads up on what happened. We actually had a big meeting on Saturday, about a week ago. And we established our leadership, and we established, or we at least put forth ideas that we would like to see in a platform, which we look to expound on in about two weeks from now, on December 10th, we're going to hold another meeting to expound on all those platform ideas and then begin our community outreach, which is, again, we established our leadership. And amongst the leadership, different committees, community outreach, political action, research and development, IT, we created all these committees within it just so that we could start getting established. So, I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. I know you, you'd asked me ahead of time if I could. And just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it again. I don't know. Things change all the time, so I don't know. Maybe you've heard on the outside there's other movements that are kind of moving in this general direction. I know we spoke about Cincinnati and a few other places before. But to kind of get your thoughts, and I've heard a few people call in from around the country questioning about this, and to kind of see what's going on, you know. Where are we at?
Well, I more or less stick with the original idea, or the original point that I think I made during or after your call, that if you, not you specifically, but if one is going to, or if a group of people are going to try to channel the Occupy, energy, for lack of a better term, into political action, in a specific link up. In other words, one would hope that the Occupy movement would cause the political system to buckle and to collapse. But if you are going to use some of that energy to try to infiltrate the political system with a more righteous political party or what have you, I'll stick with my original point. I think that is kind of hopeless, because the system is so enormous and so corrupted. We're talking trillions of dollars. We're talking the people who will just as easily commit murder as swat a fly in order to protect this corrupted political system that we have here. So I hope that you folks are not winding up tilting at windmills, I believe the expression is. And taking energy that should be focused on resistance rather than trying to change the system from within. I'm not going to criticize, not directly, because I just don't feel it's right. Anyone who has an idea of changing a corrupted system, I just feel that the effort to change this system at this point is pretty much hopeless, that the system has to be bypassed and eventually snuffed out. Because if it isn't, the corruption is just going to continue. But, you know, good luck with the venture, and I hope you'll keep us abreast of what's going on. I mean, I would like to know how you are faring with this. My personal opinion is only my personal opinion. So,
right. And that's I have honestly that's what a lot of people are saying, and we agreed in the meeting, and we vote in a majority, and we agreed in our meeting that we were not going to be a third party political party yet. That's something that we all voted and agreed that we should just be a political grassroots movement instead. And I feel the same way. I feel like, wow, I started something here. And, you know, when we start to kind of look at the big picture, it is very vast and it's very corrupt. But at the same time, I try to think about the good things in the past that have come from protesting. And mm-hmm. when they had to branch out farther, you know, look at the changes that are possible. And I remember the last week when you were talking about the women's rights movement mm-hmm. and how the women were they were imprisoned and beaten,
right.
Thrown in prison, you know, just deplorable acts against women who were just trying to find their rights to vote. Mm-hmm. And I see it today, and you were absolutely right that that's it is in exact comparison to what's going on today.
Well, I want perhaps you to keep in mind that the struggle for specific rights, which were honorable movements and did get things accomplished, whether it was a woman's right to vote, or the end of segregation, or the end of Jim Crow laws, or equal protection under the law, that seems to have slipped, that one. But, you know, these specific movements that had specific goals to get included into the system. In other words, we women want to be able to vote. We want to be included into this system that currently excludes us. That, I think, right. is different from my understanding, anyway, of the Occupy movement. The Occupy movement makes it very clear. The money in politics, the fact that the constituents are no longer the people who send these bastards to the House or the Senate, the real constituents are the people that provide the money to buy the commercials on television to influence people to think a certain way. You're not attempting to become included in the system, like the women's movement, the black movement, the anti-war movement, the student movement. What the Occupy movement is about is pretty much ending the system as it's presently constructed. Now, you know, I'm not necessarily talking about the Occupy movement being focused on overthrowing the current system. I'm talking about the Occupy movement being focused on ending the system of corruption that is brought about by the money. But if you if you're going to take on that monster, then I think you've got to be prepared to understand that it has the power to just kind of gulp you down and you disappear.
Right. And these are all points that were brought up in our meeting as well.
Good.
And they were all brought about, and which we really appreciate, because we want everyone to speak and we want everyone to have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the majority's feeling, at least in our group, that although we acknowledge the corruption and we understand that we are nothing per se right now,
mm-hmm.
we still have... It's funny, but we still have a belief that the system can change. And Occupy movement, the Occupy protests in general, have already changed the mindsets of so many people, mm-hmm. just overall, and at least education. But for instance, in the Occupy Raleigh group, it's we've watched it kind of fall apart before our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
People that cannot consistently go out and sit on the sidewalks and try to sleep overnight at the Capitol.
Oh, but wait, wait, I don't think that was the goal. The goal of the Occupy movement was to force into the national conversation these issues. The Occupy movement has succeeded. It's not about camping out. It's not about Zuccotti Park. It's not about surrounding the municipal buildings in downtown L.A. To me, anyway, my impression was that the Occupy movement was to force the discussion into the public dialogue, and they were wildly successful at that. So while while the movements, the local campouts may be disintegrating, the discussion has begun. And
go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. You're exactly right, and what was kind of the point I was trying to get to. They have started it amongst the public, but as we can all agree, the corruption of government in general is so large that we all believe that, or at least our group, we believe that we must interact politically.
Let me put you on hold for a second. I'll come back. I got to do a break here. I'll come back right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Lena Kempner. She's sponsoring all 3 hours tonight. Her message, thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. Thank you, Lena, and happy birthday. Back to Chris, who's with Occupy North Carolina. He's in Raleigh. All right, go ahead and wrap her up for me, Chris.
Sure, Mike. What I was trying to get to was if we agree that the movement's message has gone to the public, mine, I guess, is that enough to take down how big the corruption is in government? Is that enough to do it? And if not, what else can we do besides just completely overthrow the government in a civil war? And our viewpoint, at least, is to try to interact politically and change it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we're very small right now. And like I said, right now we still consider ourselves more of a grassroots political movement instead of a party.
Mm-hmm.
But the support is there for such a thing, I believe. So we're seeing growing.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the support is there. And I have nothing negative to say about what you're doing. The only input I had was just kind of the view that I've gotten from the Occupy movement as a correspondent, which is more or less what I am, and as having participated in some of the early stuff in Washington, D.C., so the Occupy movement in D.C. So, you know, anything you hear from me is just observation. It's not intended to be an overview or a critical input or anything of the sort. It's just having watched over the course of my lifetime how easy it is, and it is easy, for this system. Once the people who run the system, and there are people who do run the system, once they understand what a movement is about. And this is the reason there was so much demand at the beginning. Give us the names of your leaders. Give us your list of demands. Once that stuff is known, then it's very easy for the overarching system to accommodate that or destroy it. They decide. The movement doesn't decide. The decision is made by the overseer. I hate to use that term, but let me use it. So capitalism, that's another term, will make the decision. Do we include this movement, say the civil rights movement? Do we include it? Do we go ahead and let these folks in? Do we go ahead and let women vote? Do we go ahead and stop the war in Vietnam? Or do we absolutely and utterly smash this resistance? What do we do? And then a decision is made. So that's been my interpretation of what I've seen over the course of my life, beginning with the assassination of Kennedy up to the John Kennedy up to the present. So if the Occupy movement and people within that movement, like yourself, have figured out or can figure out or will figure out a way to channel this energy into organize, and eventually use that as a way of stopping the machine, then go for it, for God's sake. Absolutely. I'm not going to be the person that sits and says, well, the effort is ridiculous because the power is too big. There is no power too big. If you want to, go to religious texts and read stuff like David and Goliath. I mean, you know, there's no power so big. I don't think that it can't. That it doesn't have, you know, go to Greek mythology, Achilles' heel. You know, there's a weak spot. There is a vulnerable spot in all of this, all these powerful systems, if you can just find it.
Right, and I think we totally agree. And that's we at least want to try.
Mm-hmm.
And we encourage all members of the Occupy movement to at least open their minds to the opportunity or to our positions. And, you know, when you mentioned leadership, I just want to make it clear that our leadership structure was agreed to be more of a meeting of the minds, so to speak, where
mm-hmm.
no one person has a majority power over anybody. Everyone is very
mm-hmm.
equal, period,
mm-hmm.
and that will always remain that way. And it's very clear, and we try to make our guidelines to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to see more people that do support it, because we know that people do. If sitting out at the Occupy rally isn't enough for someone to get involved with the Occupy movement, then perhaps a political party movement
mm-hmm.
is enough. And we certainly welcome everyone. Please start up similar movements in your cities, your towns. Join us, because at the end of the day, we can still say that we're all a part of the Occupy movement. If it wasn't for Occupy Wall Street in general,
mm-hmm.
This would never have been birthed the way it has. So that's kind of our mindset.
Well, and that's a good one. And I appreciate the fact that you're, you know, obviously people in Occupy North Carolina are giving this a lot of thought and a lot of conversation to figure out what to do here, because nobody wants to see this energy just dissipate and the energy itself be absorbed into this corrupt system. So again, I'll just ask that you stay in touch, Chris, and continue to let us know once you get more organized, if you are looking for, to publicize, if you put together a website or whatever, let me know and I'll certainly do it, okay?
Sure, we're doing that. And our website should be up within 24 hours. It'll be OccupyPartyNC.org. We'll hopefully have that up pretty soon. But thank you again, Mike, for all your help.
All right,
and
Chris.
All your support and everything you're doing.
All right, take care. Take care, and best wishes to what you folks are doing. Take care, Chris. Break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back 7 past the hour. So, you know, this kind of stuff collects in your email inbox when you're gone for a week. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we get back and they're like 1,500 emails. And I'm just like, oh, God, no. But I found this. It's from ABC News. And in keeping with the things that we didn't have a chance to talk about last week, this one, God and Thanksgiving. it never stops, does it? Critics of President Obama got all pissed off because Mr. Obama did not thank God in his Thanksgiving-themed weekly internet address. Huh? It's according to ABC News. So the right-wing crazy people who are, they're just getting crazier and crazier. They went to the internet and got on Twitter to voice anger and disbelief. Someone named Sherman Frederick of the Las Vegas Review-Journal wrote in a Thanksgiving morning blog post, "Holy cow, is that one screwed up or what? Somebody had to remind Obama that when Americans sit down around a meal today and give thanks, they give thanks to God." Really? We didn't do that, Kathy. With our kids and grandkids, we're Americans. Over at Fox News Radio website, something over there named Todd Starnes also got his little bloomers in a wad. And he said, Obama's remarks were void of any religious reference. Although Thanksgiving is a holiday traditionally steeped in giving thanks and praise to God. Really? I thought it was about the Indians we were about to exterminate. I thought, isn't that the mythology? In fact, isn't the mythology that God turned his back on these pilgrim freaks? And, you know, let them all get starved to death and die. And the Indians, unbeknownst to the Indians, the Native Americans, the indigenous people that were already here, unbeknownst to them, these white devils were about to take their land, kill them, infect them with diseases, push them into reservations, the ones that were left. And 200, 300 years later, 400 years later, still be treating them as vermin. But in spite of all that, the Native Americans said, "Hey, welcome, man. Hey, well, you want some corn? Here. You want some turkey?" God? Oh, this makes me sick. Anyway, this freak at Fox Radio said, quote, "The president said his family was reflecting on how lucky they truly are. For many Americans, though, Thanksgiving is a time to reflect on how blessed and thankful they are." Obama did mention God once in a closing, "God bless America." God bless you to Americans watching the internet address. I thought it was separation. Oh, no, never mind. If you were keeping a scorecard on how many times Barack Obama mentioned God over the Thanksgiving holiday, you got to put this one down. He explicitly thanked God earlier in the week in his written Thanksgiving proclamation, which called the holiday, quote, "one of our nation's oldest and most cherished traditions." And what else? "We gather in our communities, in our homes, around the table or near the hearth. We give thanks to each other and to God for the many kindnesses and comforts that grace our lives. Let us praise. Let us pause to recount the simple gifts that sustain us." Now, the irony here is always chock-a-block with irony. The attacks on Obama came as these freaks who want to be president on the Republican side suspended their criticism of the president on Thursday in favor of a unified message of thanks to U.S. service members. Not to God, but to the soldiers and the sailors and the Marines and whoever, and the button pushers in the CIA black sites that are murdering thousands of people on a regular basis. Those are the people the Republicans give thanks to. Three of them, Romney, Gingrich, and Santorum, issued their Thanksgiving statements that omitted any reference to God. However, Michelle, Herman, and Rick mentioned God in their statements. Well, as I said, I was on Thanksgiving after we put together Kathy put together a dinner with a turkey. We couldn't find, or with a chicken, we couldn't find a turkey on this third world island that we were on. I hate the term third world. I don't know how else to define it. It's the poorest island in the Caribbean. Haiti is not an island. It's a country. This is, Vieques is the poorest we've read. And there's not a lot of celebrating the way we would acknowledge it on Vieques. Or Vieques. But after we had a Thanksgiving dinner, the kids and Kathy and me, which consisted of, I don't know how she did this, but she had a turkey that, or a chicken. It looked like a tiny turkey. It was a chicken. A lot of chickens run loose on Vieques, as do a lot of horses. But she bought it at a little village, I guess you'd call it a grocery store. And we had brought with us a couple of cans of mushroom soup and green beans and some of those horrible canned onions. You know, just to give the illusion. Normally when we're here, she takes green beans out of the garden and... But anyway, so Kathy put together this little Thanksgiving dinner for the kids and me and her. And we did it outside. Temperature was about 85 degrees. We were out on the patio of this place we were staying. I guess you'd call it a patio. And the sea was crashing nearby. It was really great. The kids liked it. I liked it. And afterwards, we drove to one of the... many beaches that are on Vieques that are open now after years of bombardment by the U.S. military and staged invasions. You know, this is how you invade a country that has a beach and palm trees. Was the military operating code down there for so many years. There's a movie coming out, Rum Diary, by Hunter Thompson, that is about Puerto Rico and Vieques in the 50s. And we just finished reading the book. You ought to, if you get a chance, see the movie, because they shot it down there, and some of the scenery is, you'll find is stunning beyond belief. It's the same general area of the Caribbean as the American and the French Virgins, although it's not part of that. These places, Culebra and Vieques, are too poor to be considered part of the Virgin Islands. But anyway, so afterwards, we drove through the little town, little village, near where we were staying. What is it? El Segundo? Isabel Segundo. Elizabeth II. And down toward the other small town, Esperanza. There's only two towns on this little island, little villages. And halfway between them, roughly, are beaches that you would not believe, where you can swim with the tropical fish. And driving down there, of course, we had to go through Isabel Segundo. And nobody there was thinking about lining up for the Black Friday sales, primarily because there's no place to line up. We'll be right back.
Have pity on those whose chances grow thin. There ain't no hiding place from the Father of creation. Say it.
this hour is sponsored by Lena. I don't know, should I give her last name, Kathy? Lena. Message from Lena. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Today is my birthday, and your show is the best birthday present in the world. So thanks again, Lena, for the sponsorship.
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past. So, yeah, we drove to one of the beaches on the island of Vieque that the kids like and we like, where you can swim with tropical fish, literally. And if you want to snorkel out to the reef, you can really swim with tropical fish. But on the way out there, driving truly through areas that are clear examples of the results of American imperialism and American colonialism, you're left with a sense of just how rottenly unfair it all is. And nobody on Vieque was interested in lining up for something called Black Friday. You know, any focus on gift-giving as the holidays approach, the Christian holidays approach, is heavily influenced by the Catholic Church that dominates, along with American colonialism, and the Catholic Church's insistence that people that remain ignorant and poverty-stricken. You have, you know, the tandem sledgehammers coming down on people who did nothing except happen to be living their ancestors on this island during the time of the European invasion and occupation and conquest and destruction of the Western Hemisphere. But no, you know, no attention being paid. There was some attention paid as to whether or not the gas station on the island would be open so that the people who drive cars can buy some gas. $1 a liter, $1.10 a liter. Also some focus as to whether or not there would be any fresh dairy products sent out from the main island, Puerto Rico, in that day's cargo vessel that comes by. But no focus whatsoever on whether or not, you know, how do we get to Best Buy in time? Are we going to camp outside of Walmart? You know, because these things don't exist there. And so it was that juxtaposition for us being from the United States and being in someone else's country, even though it's a country that was gobbled up by U.S. Colonialism and remains gobbled up by U.S. colonialism. For that reason, it's heavily influenced by U.S. marketing and advertising and programming and corruption. Political corruption in Puerto Rico is almost unspeakable. The murder rate is the unsolved murder rate is one of the highest in the Western Hemisphere, I think, if you discount Mexico, right? But even given all that, all those terrible statistics, the point I was trying to make, that nobody was focusing on the statistics, nobody was focusing on Black Friday or Saturday, whatever the hell it is, buy, you know, there really isn't any money to buy anything. There just isn't. So what do? Well, you fish. You surf. You go to the beach. You spend time with your family. You walk into the village and, I don't know what, hang out and discuss the day's events or non-events. Or yes, there's satellite television there. You can watch China News Agency. You can watch their world news reports. There's CNN there too. So you can go to a local store that has a couple of TVs set up and watch the news. And look at the craziness. People being, what, pepper sprayed? Where was it? Target? Walmart? No, Target was where the guy had the heart attack and everybody stepped over his body to get to all the bargains. Oy, I don't know, man. Pretty bizarre. But nobody, you know, would question us and say, you know, you look like you're from Los Estados Unidos. Are you people serious up there? Are you really? Is that what you do on Thanksgiving and the day after? Seriously? Nobody said anything. So, we'll be right back.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
Happy birthday to Lena Kay, who's our sponsor for all 3 hours tonight. It's about 25 before the hour. So, I also notice here, what was it, about a week, 10 days ago, when the guy made death threats against Obama, tried to shoot the White House, did shoot the White House. And a few hours after the PA State Police arrested a guy from Idaho for this firing semi-automatic weapon at the White House, the top student official for the College Republicans at the University of Texas, he's goddamn redneck, white boys. He tweeted that the idea of assassinating President Obama was, quote, tempting, end quote. Lauren E. Pierce. Yep, that's the guy. Lauren Pierce. Or no, that's a woman. See, here in the South, sometimes you get women and men's names twisted up. A lot of men down here have women's names. A lot of women have men's names. It's a Southern thing. But anyway, in this case, Lauren Pierce, it's a woman, she tweeted, quote, y'all, as tempting as it may be, don't shoot Obama. We need him to go down in history as the worst president we've ever had. So Pierce, when she was contacted by ABC News, said, as all Republicans, or even down the college level, liars, sneaks, cheats, cowards, she said, it was just a joke. It was just stupid. Giggling, she said that an attempted assassination would only make the situation worse. The group's vice president, Cassie Wright, I don't know if that's a guy or a girl either, you just don't know down here. She said, or he said, insofar as she's a representative of the College Republicans, maybe it shouldn't be said that shooting, murdering the President of the United States is a tempting idea. Maybe it shouldn't be said. You sick sons of bitches, every one of you. You are just, you right-wingers. Anyway, this other chick. Cassie said, giggling, Oh, maybe she shouldn't have said it, but you know, she made a positive statement in a way. Positive. So Cassie Wright, the group's vice president, said, I really don't see anything wrong with it. It's just a personal comment, not representative of any group, just freedom of speech, you know? See, these dumbasses who are the right-wingers, they don't understand what First Amendment freedom of speech guarantee is all about. They have no idea. They just say that. Well, it's freedom of speech. I can say anything I want. No, you can't. No, you can't. There are laws in every municipality, every county, every state against certain kinds of speech. Here in Georgia, if I'm driving down the highway and somebody cuts in front of me and I scream out the window, you rotten son of a bitch, I'm going to kick your ass at the next stoplight. The guy can pull over, call a cop, and have me arrested for terroristic threats. You see, freedom of speech has to do with the government. Of course, don't try to explain this to a college Republican. The government restricting speech, as the Texan George W. Bush did. The public relations director for the University of Texas College Republicans, something named Spencer Raley, that could be a boy or a girl, I don't know, had no comment. Yep. Now, the right-wing blogosphere and the right-wing halfwits that infest radio and television thought that the Texas, University of Texas Republican leader's statement was just expressing a view, freedom of speech. Didn't Limbaugh just wet his drawers over that one? Thomas Sowell, this freak at Hudson Institute? I don't know. But, you know, they all came to this woman's defense. I think it's a woman. Meanwhile, in Missouri, a Kansas teenager wrote a disparaging tweet about Governor Sam Brownback. And she said Sunday that she is rejecting her high school principal's demand for a written apology. That's right. This kid is a senior in high school named Emma Sullivan. She was taking part in a youth in government program last week in Topeka, Kansas. And she sent out a tweet from the back of a crowd of students listening to this right-wing monster, Sam Brownback's greeting. She was sitting there listening to as he greeted all these kids. And from her cell phone, she wrote, quote, just made mean comments at Governor Brownback and told him he sucked in person. He blows a lot. Brownback's office, here's the scary part, which monitors social media for postings containing the governor's name, saw Emma Sullivan's post and contacted the Youth in Government program. So when this student, Emma Sullivan, got back to school, she received a scolding and was ordered to send Brownback an apology letter. She said the principal of her school even suggested talking points for the letter she was supposed to turn in today. Or was it last Monday? Anyway, the situation exploded after her older sister, Emma Sullivan's older sister, contacted the media. Since then, Sullivan's following on Twitter has grown to about 3,000 people. She had 65 before the tweet. She says she thinks she helped open up dialogue about free speech in social media. I would do it again, she said. Now, this is where the issue of free speech does enter in. The principal of her high school, a representative of a local government agency, is ordering her to censor her speech by sending a letter of apology to this right-wing freak bastard governor of Missouri, Sam Brownback. And the student is saying, no, I'm not going to do it. Now that is an example of the abrogation of free speech. Here's the teenager, here's the kid who decided, hey, you know, this guy really sucks. I'm tired of listening to him. And because of the paranoia of these right-wingers, can you imagine this? The governor's office monitors all tweets that has the governor's name to see what they're saying about him. Unbelievable. So this kid's tweet shows up. And immediately, somebody in the governor's office contacts the youth in government program. Do you know you have a little commie in there? Do you know you have somebody that's criticizing the governor? Said he blows and sucks. The girl said, I'd do it again. Oh, she's also, Emma Sullivan, the 18-year-old, has received emails from attorneys offering their services, but she's waiting to see what happens when she refuses to hand in the letter. Her principal, the guy who demanded the letter of apology and even suggested talking points for her letter, told the Kansas City Star previously that the situation is, quote, a private issue, not a public matter, and didn't return a phone call from the AP at his home Sunday. Private issue, not a public matter? Sorry, you half-witted moronic ass. It is not a private situation. You represent the government. You are a high school principal. You are ordering a woman, a young woman, to abrogate her right of free speech. It is a public matter if ever there was one. Now, see, this kind of principal have his ass kicked right out the front door of the school and told never to come back. She hasn't heard from Governor Brownback or his staff and the 18-year-old, and she says she wouldn't mind sitting down and talking to him. No, don't waste your time, Emma. Really. She says she disagrees with Brownback politically, particularly his decision to veto the Kansas Art Commission's entire budget, making Kansas the only state in the nation to totally eliminate arts funding. So this young woman says that because that, among other reasons, that he sucks. And all of a sudden, she's on a list. She's on the governor's list of public enemies. Ah! Brownback has argued that arts programs can flourish with private dollars and that state funds should go to other functions. Like what? Oh, I know. Stopping the queers from getting married, right? Oh, I know. Invading a woman's right to privacy, right? That's what those funds should be used for, not stupid stuff like art. Right, Gov? And the 18-year-old said, I think it would be interesting to have dialogue with him. I don't know if he would do it or not, though, and I don't know that he would listen to what I have to say. Well, let me just interject something here. Emma Sullivan, 18-year-old of Kansas City suburb of Fairway. Now, this governor would no more listen to you than he would listen to anyone who advocates common sense or who says he sucks. Sponsored all 3 hours tonight. Happy birthday, Lena. We appreciate very much your sponsorship of the program. All of it tonight. How about that? So, what else? Somebody sent me something here called Contemplating Spiritual Death on Black Friday. Sounds like something Naomi Wolf or Colleen Rowley. Colleen Rowley wrote it. She was the former FBI intelligence agent, remember, who tried to warn about 9/11 and was ignored. And she, like a couple other people, a handful of other people, were ignored because the power structure in this country, the national security state that was just starting to formulate all of their New American Century stuff, Project for New American Century stuff, desperately needed an attack and the deaths of, if possible, several thousand Americans in order to put their program into place. And, of course, a lot of people subsequent to the event became aware of how determined the national security state was to create a 9/11 situation. But there were a few people who were aware of it prior to its fulfillment. And Colleen Rowley either was or was not one of those people, but she certainly tried to warn what was going to happen. But she wrote a piece that said, she asked how many people remembered that this Black Friday, last Friday, marked the 10th anniversary of Bush's famous presidential advisory after the mass murder of citizens in this country brought about by the national security state. Remember what Bush said? Americans should do their patriotic duty and go shopping. Do you remember that? You don't think this country was put into a state of psychosis as a result of the Bush presidency? I mean, very slowly, it started with the advent of the Reagan administration, the first one. That started the process of the country, the entire machinery of the country, driving the entire population into a state of insanity. But it was the Bush administration that really, 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 here we are attacked. Can you imagine after the events of Pearl Harbor? Let's just take them at face value. Let's not talk about what provoked the attack on Pearl Harbor. Let's just take it at face value. If after the attack on Pearl Harbor, if President Roosevelt had said, okay, let's all go shopping. There were fewer people killed in Pearl Harbor, in the attack on Pearl Harbor, than the attack on Lower Manhattan. But what would have happened had President Roosevelt said, okay, now we want everyone to respond to this day of infamy by going shopping? So whether or not somebody wants to point it out or not, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, his puppet master, were very instrumental in pushing this country into total psychosis, total unstoppable psychosis. The idea of asking the American people to make sacrifice in the coming war on terror. And hadn't it been a bitch? Hadn't this been just a bitchin' decade, huh? This war on terror decade that we are completing? Wow, man. God damn. Do you know how many people have died because of our war on terror? How many people continue to die? Who have nothing to do except with any of this except being recipients of a war on terror by us. Ooh. Anyway, the idea of asking American people, Colleen Rowley Rhodes, to make sacrifices was too 70s, to Jimmy Carter. Remember Jimmy Carter, Christian evangelical, who tried to tell Americans, hey, look, come on, get real. Remember what the right wing, the real Christians, did to him? And as Raleigh points out, the 2001 attacks were quickly seized upon by hardcore propagandists and shock doctrine advocates as the new Pearl Harbor. And as she puts it, that sparked a decade of blatant social psychological manipulation. But the result was this kind of psychosis that we are in now. People are still stomping on each other on the Friday after Thanksgiving to go buy a bunch of goddamn trash. It's unbelievable. It's just totally insane. Do you think the American people will ever wake up? You know, the Occupy movement, how bleak it must be. to be putting yourself out there for a couple of months, being gassed, beaten, pepper sprayed, and then come the day after Thanksgiving, the crazy sons of bitches who inhabit this country storm the temples, the Walmarts and Targets and Macy's. They storm the temples again. Gimme, 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 gimme. This is crazy. Just absolute crazy. So, of course, the fascist media in this country has proved very effective in getting Americans to support these bloody wars and to totally ignore the causes of this violence. Just ignore it. Just go shopping. Go shopping. Go buy some stuff. Or not. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.